they see, it smells the same.
Life number 11,575, Frozen Oasis, Part 2. After dinner, the crew scattered to their respective tasks once again. Dexter had finished his workload for the day and would be off duty until the next morning. Seizing the opportunity, he headed for the green room with his journal. The Oasis Arboretum, nicknamed the Green Room for obvious reasons, existed as a massive, vaulted structure at the heart of the complex. Dexter traveled slowly through the narrow, Spartan hallways to the green room door, pressing the button on the wall beside it. As the door slid open, Dexter felt a blast of warm air wash over him. The cavernous room remained several degrees warmer than the rest of the facility, thanks to its glass roof and crowds of plants. The overhead grid of thick, insular panes concentrated the distant sun's light and fed the myriad of plants inside. Everywhere about him, bird songs and rushing water echoed off the flat chamber walls. He knew the warbling came from strategically placed speakers hidden in faux rocks, but the water fell from a spout high above the far end of the arboretum. It gathered in a pool and trickled throughout the atrium in a well-designed route. More than simply aesthetic appeal, the micro-river kept the plants and the air moist in the green room. At a glance, the room seemed to Dexter like a Disneyland replica of Central Park. The atrium was large enough to accommodate a few short hills of real soil covered with grass and low shrubbery. Even a decent crop of trees grew here, though much shorter than they would in the wild. The only oversight Dexter found were the bugs. Like the birds, they were absent. Though he knew the logistics of keeping mosquitoes, bees, and other insects contained would be impossible, he would gladly have dealt with the occasional bite for the added level of realism. Squirrels, frogs, and other terrestrial fauna simply did not exist on this continent, leaving it as the exclusive playground for the denizens of the oasis. Dexter removed his shoes and placed them by the door, walking across the grass to the picnic table by the stream. As he set his journal down, he caught a whiff of something pungent in the moist air. The unmistakable odor of cannabis drew his eyes immediately to the base of a tree a dozen yards away. Jerry, another off-duty worker, lay on the grass looking up through the glass ceiling. His eyes were closed, ears filled by white earbuds, and a half-smoked joint protruded from his lips. Nobody knew how he managed to smuggle pot seeds halfway across the globe unnoticed, but even Tex did not stop him from planting them. Technically, no laws existed whatsoever on this continent, only company policy. So long as the plants didn't interfere with anyone's work, Tex ignored the official letter of corporate law. After 2 years in the oasis, Jerry had lived there longer than anyone but the trees and considered the facility his own castle. The short row of spiky-leafed plants stood as a testament to this. Sensing that someone had approached, Jerry opened one eye and saw Dexter at the table. Immediately, he sat up and took the joint from his mouth.
"Oh, sorry, man," he said, pausing his music. "You want me to clear out with this?"
Though he practically owned the place, Jerry was by far the easiest crew member to work with. No one ever asked him to smoke elsewhere if the smell offended them. No one needed to. Dexter shook his head.
"Hey, no worries, man. I don't mind. I'm just here for a little writing." "Right on," Jerry replied. "Hey, you want a piece of this?"
He held the remainder of the joint up towards Dexter, who shook his head again.
Thanks. Not tonight, though."
He knew he'd tried pot with Jerry on more than one occasion, but he really only enjoyed it when a group of them was passing the joints around. The social aspect of smoking in a circle combined with the drug's effects to counteract his shy demeanor. The high did little for him, but Dexter enjoyed the hiatus of his inhibitions. Jerry nodded and lay back down again, flicking ash onto the grass. Dexter opened his journal and sat down at the table. "September 12th, 2141. My name is Dexter Jared Peterson. I am 26 years old and I live in New York City. In the last 7 years, I have lived as 11,575 different people." He struggled to remember the details about France. Memories of previous lives tended to grow foggy, like the particulars of a dream. In some lives, Dexter simply had no time to write, typically when he was being shot at. "I was recently an American soldier during World War II, somewhere deep in the heart of France. I almost got killed again, twice, but no bullet ever seems to have my name on it.
I don't remember much now, only that I saw more people die, and probably escaped less than a second before I joined them. Whatever propels me forward from one life to the next seems hell-bent on keeping me intact. I wonder if I'm still jumping like this when I'm in my 90s, if I'll ever see a real death. Maybe I'm gonna live forever like this, like a ghost behind the eyes of thousands of people. There's something else, too. A girl. I noticed her first in my coffee shop back home, and in the next life as the daughter of someone important. She has dark hair and stands about up to my chin, thin like a little girl, but definitely a woman. She appeared again in France, the same face and body, but as a farmer's daughter. I remember that she was strong. She was someone who could very well lead the resistance against the Germans if she wanted, not at all like the quiet piece of property you'd expect from a colonial female. Now she's appeared again, even stronger. They call her Big Al here, but her name is Alexandria. Alexandria Fox Monroe. God, I can remember her name. Dexter looked over at Jerry where he lay, tapping his foot gently and exhaling a plume of bitter smoke. Dexter wondered what went on in the minds of men like him, men with single lives. I believe Alexandria's name has stayed the same from one life to the next, just like mine. I wonder if I've met her before and just forgot her. Maybe she suffers like I do, passing like a football from one tall, skinny girl to the next. If she recognizes me in different lives, she certainly has made no sign of it, not yet anyhow. Jerry stood up and dusted himself off. He offered a silent salute and sauntered down the arboretum path, presumably to his quarters for a snack binge or a nap. Now alone with the waning sunlight in the trees, Dexter continued writing. I'm now an engineer working at a massive wind power project on the continent of Antarctica. The whole effort seems to be entirely American-run, but we're far from any government or civilization. To be honest, this is a life I could get used to. I think there are a dozen of us living in this habitat, tending to wind turbines, storage capacitors, the vehicles, and the oasis itself. This is the first time I've ever been to Antarctica. I know that. It's cold as hell, sure, but it's more peaceful than anything I can remember. No one is shooting at me, and my life is very simple. One of the workers is a 5-star chef, and another grows weed in the arboretum. I love New York, but I think everyone should live like this. Aside from the journal, I will try my best to remember what this life feels like. Dexter heard the green room door open again and looked up to see Alexandria enter. She looked about for a moment, then directly at him. Dexter knew she wasn't here to relax. She had come to dig further into his business. He didn't mind, though he imagined the Dexter of this life might have beforehand. No matter how reserved his echo self might feel, he wanted to know about her as much as she wanted to know about him. "We meet again, Big Al," he said, turning the journal off and closing its leather cover. "It's a big world, but funny I keep bumping into you." Dexter chuckled. She was as much a smartass as he was. This was good. "What are you writing, Deej?" She kicked off her shoes next to his and walked across the grass to the table. "Oh, nothing much, just keeping the journal, you know." Big Al looked up as she walked, enjoying a slow breath of warm air. Dexter's eyes followed hers into the overcast twilight. The setting sun cast sideways shadows across the underside of the clouds, giving every bump a crisp edge. "What did you plan on doing with your life before you ended up here, anyway?" She posed the question to Dexter, but her eyes remained fixed on the blanket of clouds. "Really, just this, to be honest. I did my undergrad thesis on energy resources in extreme environments and designed a tower kind of like the ones we got here. Mine was for the desert, though. The only problem I couldn't figure out was cooling the things in a landscape with high heat and no water." She said, taking a seat across from him. "I always wanted to work at NASA. Find some other way to get things off this planet other than big tubes of explosives. Wind power isn't exactly going to get us to Mars, but it'll look great on a resume." Dexter nodded. "Yeah, it will. I suppose after this I could get a job at a government think tank or something. I mean, what we're doing here, it's kind of like saving the world." "If this world's worth saving, that is." Her smile disappeared as she looked back down at the table. "I swear, it feels like we keep coming so close to a real breakthrough as a species, And then history loops back again. We start bickering like little kids, only we've got bombs and bioweapons and small-dicked politicians waving them all around at each other. Part of me wouldn't mind living here for the rest of my life. No one's gonna bomb an ice cube. Hey, do you speak French? Dexter couldn't believe he just asked that, but the question rolled off his tongue before he could stop himself. Big Al looked up at him, visibly confused. What? French, the language. Do you speak it? Why the hell would I know French? Dexter shrugged, trying to appear aloof as his brain toiled to cover his tracks. I don't know. They say you can learn a lot about someone by the languages they speak. Well, what about you? Do you speak French? Dexter pointed a finger at her. I asked you first. She shook her head and grinned. Nah, I have enough trouble with English. Well, I've got a decent grip on English and a little Japanese, but not French. Then why did you ask? Dexter began to grow a little flushed, hoping Big Al wouldn't notice. I don't know. It was just a random thought, really. I told you I wanted to go to Paris. Her eyes drifted down to his closed tablet. What do you write about, anyway? Dexter sighed and laid a hand on the device as though she were going to pilfer it. For a moment, he contemplated reading it to her. Perhaps, Dexter thought, she would hear the entries and realize she'd been in more than one life with him already. Maybe she knew already and kept a journal of her own somewhere, hidden. Dexter wanted desperately for someone to understand him, to ride beside him from one stop to the next. His rules quickly overrode his optimism. If she recognized him, she would have said something by now. He couldn't recall ever seeing her writing in a journal or mentioning anything about other lives. Until he could figure out what was happening to him, he didn't dare try to explain it to someone else. I write about my life, he answered, so I don't forget it. What do you mean? How can you forget your life? You'd be surprised, said Dexter. You can remember what you did 5 or 10 years ago, right? You were in school trying to get a good GPA and land some high-class industry job, right? Yeah, she replied. I know what I was doing 5 years ago. Do you remember who you were, though? I mean, we change. As people, we change all the time, no matter how much we try to stay the same. We work real hard to get a steady income, a house that'll last, a car that'll run forever, a job that won't disappear. We try to fight change. But here we are, changing. Every second, we're someone else. Take some of the conservative business types and ask them about their college days. Chances are good they were a bunch of crazy hippies back in their 20s. So you're basically writing letters to your future self. The thought had never occurred to Dexter before that he might just be doing precisely that. Still, he clarified, not exactly. You see, it's easy to look back and say, I was young and stupid, or those were the times we lived in, but that makes it sound like anyone that age or from that era would have acted the same. The world might keep repeating itself, but every 10 minutes, we see the world from entirely different eyes. The only way I found to take a snapshot of who I was is to write it down. That way, when I'm older and I don't know who I am anymore, I can at least know who I used to be and why I became who I am. Big Al stared at Dexter for nearly a full minute. The sun had disappeared far off into the northwest, leaving only black sky and grow lights above them. The way she looked at him, Dexter could not ascertain whether she'd understood a word he'd said. Suddenly, he became very self-conscious and cleared his throat dryly. I get it, I think, she said quietly. Dexter had hoped for more, but she left it at that. Would you like to see something? Dexter heard himself ask. He knew as soon as he said it what he intended to show her, though again the question escaped his lips before he could suppress it. Big Al smiled and nodded. Somewhere in the back of his mind, Dexter's book of rules was burning. Sure, Deej, she said. She knew where they were headed as well. Dexter picked up his journal and stood, followed quickly by the girl. They donned their shoes and headed once again into the bleak hallway, neither of them speaking. After spending so much time with someone in close proximity, Dexter found he did not need to speak. After speaking countless tongues and regional patois, he felt that language itself was the most rudimentary form of communication. Spoken word seemed more like a primitive set of training wheels than a means of conversation.
Once a human being had grown accustomed to the manner and function of another, they could speak volumes without disturbing the silence. A wife can convey her disapproval over her husband's poor budgeting with a single raised eyebrow. Masters of kung fu have long studied the art of following an opponent's eyes to anticipate their next strike. House cats kiss by blinking slowly at each other. Though the Dexter from New York City had met Alexandria for only a few brief moments in different lives, the Dexter that lived in Antarctica had worked with her for months. As they came to the door of his quarters, he turned and resorted to the most primitive form of interaction again. "You understand, of course, that this is my private place. This is where I am by myself, where I am centered. I won't ask you to keep it secret, though. I can't tell you what to do. I just want you to understand that this is not just where I sleep." Big Al looked up and down the drab hallway as though they were breaking into a bank vault. "Yeah, sure thing, Deej," she said. They stepped inside and Dexter closed the door behind him. Everywhere she looked, Alexandria found herself confronted by a rainbow so vivid it nearly threw her off balance. The Oasis personal quarters offered little square footage, just enough to qualify for a studio apartment. Every single square inch of Dexter's walls and ceiling had been covered by colored birds. Hundreds of paper cranes flew in rows of complementary colors. Flocks swirled into patterns that varied from impressionist to psychedelic. The materials ranged from foil gum wrappers to giant discarded blueprints. Dexter sat quietly on his desk chair, setting the journal on its shelf. He had to relocate a few unfinished birds to make room. Alexandria's eyes followed the patterns, flying through an illusory sky filled with paper feathers. He even saw her wince as the din of so many birds echoed in her ears. He heard them too, far better than the artificial warbling of the green room. He had learned to listen, to distinguish each bird's call individually. Every one of the paper cranes told their own story as they flew through his indoor sky.
You did all of this?" she asked.
Dexter was a little disappointed that they had to speak again. "Yes, one at a time over the past few years. Some of them I brought from my dorm when I started doing this."
"How many of them are there?"
Dexter didn't need to think or count. He knew. 11,574. I'm still working on one right now, though."
"Why haven't you shared this with anyone else? I mean, Deej, you should hear what some of the guys think you have in here."
"I know," he answered. "I like hearing the stories. There's so little mystery down here that most of the time our brains are on standby. I'm glad at least that I can spark a conversation every once in a while."
"But Deej," she said, looking up at the cranes again, "this is incredible. I mean, this goes way past what I thought you had in here."
"What were you expecting?"
"I don't know. Rows upon rows of unlabeled journals with weird, I'm gonna kill everyone shit scribbled in them."
"You thought I'd have something like that in here?"
"Well," she admitted, "not really, but I gotta tell you, my mind was really starting to get creative. Is this like a hobby? I mean, you know, like painting or pottery or learning the violin?"
"This is meditation, Alexandria," he said. Immediately, she looked down at him again and sat on the edge of his bed.
"Meditation?"
"My grandparents were Buddhists. Pretty much all Japanese are in some way. Kind of the same way most Americans are Christians, even if they don't go to church. My parents really were Buddhists, though, and they taught me a lot about meditation."
"I don't see an altar or anything in here, though."
Dexter chuckled. "There is no altar. At least not here. I honestly don't know what I believe in as far as God or spirits go, but I do know that meditation works for me. It slows the rest of the world down for a while."
"And you make these cranes while you meditate?"
"No," he explained. "The cranes are the meditation. There's more to it than folding a square of paper a certain way. The mathematical and geometric particulars of turning a flat paper into a bird are something even a child can grasp. It's a metamorphosis. You begin with something flat, inconspicuous, lifeless." Dexter took a large square of blue paper from his desk. Several stacks of varying dimensions lay neatly side by side, destined to join the flock eventually. "It's not much at first, just a square with stuff on it that someone else designed before you ever touched it. Fold it once, and already you've transformed it. It has dimension, depth, far from anything definite, but more than it once was. Each new fold adds something more to it, changing its nature. As he spoke, Dexter folded the square many times in very specific places. He never learned origami back in New York, but in Antarctica, he didn't even need to look at the paper to see what he was doing. Before long, you can see what will become wings, a head, a tail. These used to just be parts of a single boring surface, like the tundra out there. Now, it's got both direction and anatomy. When you fold the head, what are you thinking about? What is the bird thinking about? What will the head contain once the bird is finished? Big Al just stared in silence at the developing crane as Dexter spoke. You'll see the wings taking shape. Where does this bird fly? Why does he fly? Careful folds make this ordinary square into a beautiful creature. One hasty fold or unintentional crease leaves it permanently disfigured, like the Elephant Man. That's terrible, she said. Dexter just shrugged. It doesn't matter that much. When you've done as many of these as I have, you learn to just move on and focus a little harder on not screwing the next one up. But what about the crane? How does it feel spending the rest of its life with a bad wing just because you were in a hurry? Dexter had never given it much thought. Neither of him had. He found himself searching for an answer that his echo self couldn't provide. He was a bit surprised that she already thought of the paper bird as something alive and emotional. I don't know, he finally admitted. But I haven't damaged one in years. I mean, at this point I've made so many I don't even need to fold the paper to see the crane. Each crease is already there, just waiting for my fingers to cause it to be. Each wing or tail or breast is already in place. He put his hand on the pile of squares. I look at this stack and I don't see paper. I see eggs. After enough meditation, I realized I wasn't creating anything. That's just ego, and I'm not God. The cranes live in the paper already. All I'm doing is intervening for a short time, helping them hatch. And when I do that, the cold and the overcast skies and the weeks of polar night and the cramped little hallways and the lowest bidder technology and Tex's god-awful sense of humor, all of that just goes away, and I'm left with a flock of colored birds. And I'm there with them. I am them. I'm flying through a sky over a landscape that's anything but white. We migrate to Mexico or somewhere warm until I have to come back here for work. Sometimes at night, I just lay here and listen to them singing me to sleep. Dexter set the crane on his desk, perfectly formed with wings outstretched proudly. Big Al stared at it for a long time. She heard it singing and watched it test its wings in the wind. With tape and some string, it would someday fly high above the floor of Dexter's little room on the ass end of planet Earth. What about this one? She pointed to the largest of the cranes, half formed from plain white paper. It had begun as a botched poster print from the facility's plotter, nearly 3 feet per side. Dexter looked at it and furrowed his brow. That one, I'm not sure. I keep coming back to that one, but I don't know what to make of it. All these other birds have stories and personalities, but I can't seem to get anywhere with the big one. Why did you start making it? Dexter could only think of one thing to say, though it made little sense even to him. This is the bird that won't be coming back when he flies away. I think that one, more than any of the others, is me. I just gotta find a way to finish him sooner or later. That's incredible, she said. Oh, dismissed Dexter. It's just what I do to relax. I mean, Tex has his country, Jerry's got his weed, and I've got my birds. No, Deej, this is something amazing. Thank you for sharing this with me. Dexter didn't know how to respond. He had intended to share the flock with her, not because it would end her constant pestering, but because she shared something even stranger with him. Whether she knew it or not, Dexter still had no clue, but he had to let her in. He felt he owed her at least that much. For the first time in 7 years, he looked forward to seeing something other than his empty apartment. Now that he'd shared his aviary with her, though, he suddenly felt self-conscious again. I think I could use some coffee now, he said. Yeah, sure thing, Deej. She stood and walked past him to the panel near the door, pressing a few buttons. The internal comm system opened with a distinct tone.
"What are you doing?" asked Dexter.
"Danny and Phil were going to go play some cards in the rec room. They usually put a pot on if we're out of beer."
"Oh, good thinking," he replied. After a short wait, a voice emanated from the wall panel. "Phil here."
"Hey, you two got some coffee going? I don't want to make a whole pot in control if there's some in the rec room."
"Oh yeah, sure thing, Al. We got some coffee on. About to make a second pot, actually. We got a good game of Hold'em running here."
"Great," she replied. "We'll be down in a bit, so save some."
"Sure thing. Hey, wait a sec."
"What is it?" Alexandria looked a little concerned, and Dexter knew immediately why Phil had taken notice. Mentally, he kicked himself for not thinking of it sooner.
"Are you calling from DJ's room?"
"Maybe," she replied curtly. "In a minute, I'll be calling from down the hall. Big Al out." She closed the channel abruptly and looked back at Dexter.
"Shit, Deej," she said. "Now it's never gonna end, I swear to God."
"Yeah, don't worry about it," he said.
"I'm sorry, really, I totally just blew it."
Dexter shrugged and repeated, "Don't worry, give him something to talk about other than the cold and politics. Hell, tell him we made wild monkey love in here." Big Al smirked. "You'd like that, wouldn't you?" Dexter caught himself before answering truthfully. The thought of sex with Alexandria had crossed his mind, but intimacy was impossible. He could start with foreplay and be someone else, somewhere else, before he could unwrap a condom. He'd been a married man on and off over the years, but every time he felt like he was sleeping with somebody else's wife. At first, he was enthusiastic about the prospect of sex without all the cumbersome dating and wooing, but the novelty wore off quickly. The years spent sleeping with strangers left that part of him feeling like a weathered gigolo. Dexter held his tongue long enough for Big Al to notice, finally saying,
"Look, Deej, you're a really sweet guy. Not one guy in a million could show me what you just did. In fact, if we were two different people in a different situation, I might go out for more than just coffee with you."
Dexter's face brightened a little.
"The fact is, though, we're trapped down here in this little rat maze, and I don't want to complicate things. Right now, I'd love to just grab some coffee in the rec room with you. Sound good?"
"That sounds perfect," said Dexter. He stood from his chair and followed her into the hallway. As they walked, she noticed how plain and small the hallway seemed now. Her senses had grown accustomed to the flying rainbow. Now the off-white paint and fluorescent lighting seemed sick. The habitat's color looked like that of a corpse, making her long for the little room full of birds.
"So, what do you plan on telling them anyway?"
"Like you said," she replied without hesitation. "We just made wild, nasty monkey love in there. I even got to spank your ass like a schoolgirl."
Dexter burst into laughter.
Don't embellish it too much, okay? I still have to work here."
They reached the rec room and heard Caravan Palace spilling out into the hallway. Dexter entered first and made a beeline for the coffee pot. He knew he'd be weathering a shitstorm and needed the extra brain fuel to stay afloat. Danny and Phil paused their card game to grin at the two of them. The pause lasted less than a second, but both Dexter and Big Al knew their lives had just become more complicated.
"So," Danny said, flinging his cards onto the table, "you been to no man's land, huh? How's the weather?"
"It could have been a computer glitch, you know," she replied, knowing none of them would buy such a story. "I might have been calling from storage room B. You know how bad the wiring is on that end of the Oasis." Dexter drank his coffee like a homeless man in January.
"Oh, I'd call that a big confession right there," said Phil, shuffling the cards. "What do you think?"
"Yeah, sure, storage room. And you just missed Chester A. Arthur. He was owning the two of us until I busted him with a royal flush. So what exactly did you see in storage room B?"
Big Al shot a glance over at Dexter, looking him in the eyes as he set his mug down, half empty.
"You want to know what goes on in DJ's quarters?" she asked the two.
"Hell yeah," said Danny.
She casually filled her own mug and walked over to Danny. He fidgeted with his chips with his right hand as she leaned down to his ear. Her lips nearly touched him as she whispered, causing him to drop the chips haphazardly onto the table.
"Whoa! Really?"
He looked up at Dexter as Big Al took her coffee to the couch.
"Damn, man, I'll quit asking."
Phil looked from Danny to Dexter to Big Al and back again.
What? What did she say, man?
Why don't you ask Deej yourself, she said from the couch.
Oh, come on,
Phil protested as he dealt. I'll tell you, Dexter said, sipping his coffee again. I've got thousands of origami cranes plastered all over my walls and ceiling.
No, seriously, Phil insisted, obviously frustrated. I mean it, man. What the hell were you two doing in there?
Dexter just smirked. From the couch, Big Al commented,
I swear, this is going to be more fun than I'd thought.
She switched on the television and waited for the satellite to kick in. Dexter hoped the conversation would shift from his personal life to matters of more importance, such as the Super Bowl. He took a seat on the opposite end of the couch from her and held his mug with both hands. The feed finished buffering and ESPN 12 flashed onto the screen. A show dedicated to the Oslo Snowhawks detailed their troubled season and their developing rivalry with the Dallas Cowboys. Ever since the NFL opened up to international competition, a Northern European team always managed to make it into the championships. The programming didn't matter. Big Al left the remote where it lay and simply watched while she drank. Dexter knew the look on her face. She was flying with colored birds. He, too, felt more relaxed than he'd ever been, sipping calmly on well-brewed coffee and sinking into the cushion. As the program continued, he focused less on the pictures and sound and more on the effects of caffeine on his body. I gotta hit the head, he said as commercials began. Big Al just nodded and kept her eyes on the screen. Dexter couldn't tell if the connection between them had begun to fade or if she was still exiting the meditation. Danny and Phil concentrated on their game and took no notice of Dexter as he opened the door. He hadn't seen a lavatory since dinner, and the coffee began to take its toll. Heading alone into the dreary hallway, he listened to the sound of his footsteps echoing off the blank walls. It almost seemed as though two sets of footsteps existed, one from his feet and one from somewhere he could not see. The toilets, scattered throughout the oasis, were little more than high-class airline lavatories, barely large enough to sit down in. At the very least, the doors locked properly most of the time. Dexter made certain his was sealed sufficiently before tending to his business. He ran some cold water onto his hands and rubbed his face, breathing in slowly and resting his eyes. A sudden banging on the door startled him. Dexter thought he'd been there for only a minute at most, but judging from the impression his chin had made on his palm, he'd been sound asleep for at least an hour. The art of sleeping with one's head up had been perfected by all medical students, regardless of age or nationality. Dexter, now far beyond his school years, still practiced the art from time to time, as an homage to his upbringing. The fog slowly lifted from his dozing brain as a nurse poked her head through the door. Dr. Peterson, are you okay? She looked genuinely concerned, staring past arched eyebrows far too bushy for Dexter's liking.
I'm fine, really,
he stumbled, checking to see if he'd drooled while unconscious. He had.